Check it out.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, streaming on guardiantalkradio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Forget no way they crucified Jesus Christ. I'll never forget no way they sold Marcus Garvey for rice.
Good afternoon, Bahamas. This is Remark. I'm your host, Garth Roseborough. We were just scrambling in here today. It's, you know what time of year it is. It's what they call the Yuletide season. Everyone is excited and happy, and, you know, we all love Jesus. But driving here today on a Sunday, you would think that there wouldn't be any slow pokes on the road. And I just happened to be behind a bus that just wouldn't go faster than 10 miles per hour. So I have much to talk to Jesus about. I've been doing some little cussing on the road. Please forgive me. But I ain't going to do it no more. I can leave earlier next time. But I was doing like everybody else. I was cleaning up my yard. You got to clean up your yard for Christmas. If you didn't clean it all year, at least you got to clean it for Jesus at the end of the year. And so I was there cleaning up my yard, and the fellows who was working with me, you know, you got to pay them. Now, if you don't pay these people at this time of year, you're going to be in trouble. Pay the people their money. They painting, they cleaning your yard, they cleaning your car, the maid doing an extracurricular job in terms of cleaning the windows and everything else. Pay the people their money. This is Remark, once again, God's Rose, for I have a very, very full program for you today. As a matter of fact, when I got to the door, I heard all these deep, sexy bass voices. I said, what the heck? Because I thought I was the only one who's supposed to have a deep, sexy voice. And then, you know, when I go home, all I can hear is Darvin Russell. Boy, his voice deep and sexy, and he's so smart. And then now I got three other men in here, and all of them got these deep, sexy voices. What's going on in 2024? Deep, sexy, isn't he? Because I thought it was them fellas who sing soprano. You know, Michael Jackson and them other type of fellas, and what other fellas named R. Kelly and them type of fellas. And all of a sudden, everybody got Barry White voice. So in their Barry White voice, I guess they each will wish you all a Merry Christmas. We're hoping for a safe one, a prosperous one. I want to throw out some phone lines today because you will want to call in today. We don't have no ugly man in the house today, folks. No one here is ugly. It's a pretty good handsome man in here today. So you women who want to look on GuardianTalkRadio.com site and look at the camera, you can go and take a look at these men. I mean, they're all spoken for, but I just want y'all to know that handsome is not dead in the Bahamas, all right? Handsome is not dead. Here are the numbers for you. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the family of islands, 300-5720, or you can text at 422-4796. Now, I got to go quickly today because, I mean, so many things happened this week. But listen, I am privileged today to have in my presence all the way from North Abaco. Am I right?
North Abaco, Darren Henfield.
Darren Henfield, North Abaco. You know, I've paid for 16 people in my lifetime to go to North Abaco, but I have never been to Abaco.
You don't know what you're missing. You know what they say in Abaco, Garth, if you come and you drink the water.
Well, I could call a name. I sure you know the name in North Abaco.
Call the name.
Gentry Morris.
Yes.
That's my childhood friend.
Wow.
Like my very close friend. Like we grew up together. Like his house phone number was 392-7232. Like, I know them.
You really know them
now. I know them. I have not been to Abaco.
Gentry hasn't had you down to Abaco.
And he has texted me, he's spoken to me, but, you know, I just never
when
been to
come,
Abaco.
When you come, Prime Minister Ingram and I will take you fishing.
But I had to have him, you know, when I spoke to Mr. Darren Henfield on the phone, he was so cordial, he was so excited to be here. He wanted to be here last week. And, you know, last week we had a power-packed program. So I want you to call your family, call your friends, call your loved ones, call those people who could sponsor this program. We're going to talk about that a little bit later, too. But, you know, I need a little Christmas money myself. But Darren Henfield, it's a pleasure to have you. Also sitting next to you, I can tell the truth. We talk about transparency and accountability, right?
Thank you.
So let me be transparent. My cousin, my good cousin, Brian Brown, all the way from the Golden Isles constituency, he said, God, don't be playing it close like this coming to the show now. You got to be on time, my brother. And I said, well, you know, I was right there at 5, but, you know, we're a little short staff here today, too. But we good. We good. We in the house. You're in the house. 323-6232. 325-4316, 325-4259, and then we call anywhere from the family of violence, 300-5720, or text only at 422-4796. Mr. Enfield, let me start with you first, sir, if I may.
Yes, sir.
And I have Don Russell to my right, and I have a surprise guest for you today, Mr. Glenroy Pratt. He's also in the house. He'll be joining us later on in the conversation. Of course, this is the spirit of sharing on this show today, because we boys, we friends. You were in North Abaco, and we recall the tragedy that hit Abaco. I mean, totally devastating. I do believe you were the person at the helm at the time. Am I correct?
I was.
You're the person at the helm. Yeah. So everyone was talking about you in Abaco, the people of Grand Bahama, all over the world. They were talking about Dorian, Hurricane Dorian. Mm-hmm. And I just felt it's only fair to have you come in here today to allow yourself to speak to the Bahamian people, because as a citizen, we look at the member of parliament as one who should be either Superman or Wonder Woman. We want them to take 2 fish and 5 loaves and divide that and feed 5,000 people. We hear the rumors that y'all got a whole warehouse full of food and ain't giving nobody none. We heard that y'all got all this wood and supplies and plywood and this, and you ain't giving nobody none. Then we saw some little igloos that came from Alaska. And I use Alaska in a humorous way, because they're little round, little circular things which y'all had. And people's complaining about that. And then y'all was trying to get people out of these little house, and ain't nobody want to move. Then we saw the tractor come in and say, you can move today. Now, I trying to learn that one, and I'll tell you why. Because we got some tenants, you got to take the tractor and run them out there, you know. These people don't like to move. They won't pay no rent, but they don't want to move. You, as the member of parliament and the representative, please tell me your personal experience. It's not a PLP FNM thing for you today, but tell me your experience sitting in that seat, having the job on your shoulder, and having to perform.
As a former member of the Royal Bahamas Defense Force Guard, thank you for the question. It's good,
yeah.
Good to be here. I determined to go home to Abaco, where I was born and bred, grew up, went through primary school all the way to high school, graduated high school, and then came and joined the Defense Force. I determined to go home because I had some experience in disaster management,
mm-hmm.
and emergency risk management as a senior officer. And I determined to go home and ride out the storm. Something, you know, my wife and children, you know, were very concerned about.
Mm-hmm.
And even my cabinet colleagues were very concerned about, but I was happy to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The storm was none like we had ever imagined.
Yes.
Dorian came in on a king tide, which is a super high tide.
Mm-hmm.
We said to the people in the mud and the pea, those communities, those irregular communities just adjacent or just south of the dock, the harbor, that if you stay here, you're going to die. I mean, that's recorded live. We made these pronouncements to them. And we wanted to put the fear of God in them. You know,
mm-hmm.
Prime Minister Minnis came down just the day before, or hours before the storm, and said to people, if you're going to stay, you know, you're going to leave in body bags and this kind of thing. It was a most catastrophic event. We saw tremendous destruction to government property, and we had, regrettably, loss of life. Lives.
Regrettably, yes.
We don't know how many people died, because irregular communities, people who live in them,
yes,
you don't know who all are really there.
Correct.
And so people, these irregular migrants don't come to the government and say, well, we're in the mud or the pea or sandbanks or the farm or wherever.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is fair to say we don't know how many people died. But I know in the eye of the storm, we had a respite We had a moment when I instructed the administrator at the time, Administrator Duncombe, the police and defense force to open the government complex where we found safety, because most of our shelters in Dundas and Murphy had lost their integrity. One or two remained. At that time, we were using schools and churches. The government complex, the clinic, they were still intact. And so we had people come in there. And so people came out of the mud and pee in the eye of the storm.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say, like, rain and God was with us, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I always say this, that had Dorian come in the dark hours of the morning and not around midday or just before noon as it did, the event would have gone far more worse for many of us.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, because we still had daylight when things cleared up a bit. Mm-hmm. This storm was replete with hurricanes, with hurricane winds that exceeded 200 miles per hour. Sometimes I understood it gusted at 250.
Terrifying.
I could feel the pressure suck out of the building as tornadoes pass through the atrium.
I can imagine.
Because the way you need to go to Abaco and see the way the government complex is built, there's an atrium, so the wind was able to pass under. I recognized immediately and instructed that we find a secondary place to go as an operations room, because we had set up, you know, before I got there, they had set up all of their communications and everything else in a room surrounded by glass.
Mm.
And I said, this is not a good idea, so let's find a place. And true to form, in the second half of the storm, it was more nasty than the first half. We lost in the integrity of the room. We were able to move very quickly. But I'm an island boy. Island people know how to survive in storms. We had something like 1,700, if I remember, NGOs that came to our aid following the storms. The Americans sent in the Coast Guard helicopters.
Mm-hmm.
We had them follow. One of the things that I did as foreign minister was I laid aside all of these diplomatic things that you had to do after a storm, and I determined to move them ahead of the storm. For instance, if we knew we were going to be hit, we had a good idea that we would be struck, we would send dip notes ahead to our partners and strategic partners like the Americans, the Europeans, and the United Kingdom, and we'd say to them, you're free to come
mm-hmm.
immediately after the passage of the storm. And the Americans followed the storm from Inagua. They brought their assets up Nera to mm-hmm. Abaco, and the last time I spoke to them, before things got nasty, they were pretty much in Exuma. And so immediately after the passage of the storm, we were able to medevac.
Wow.
Evacuate a lot of people that were critically injured.
Mm. But it sounds as if you had your hands full. I'm listening to you utilizing your risk management abilities and talents and education. From my perspective, however, we're listening and we're hearing that the Free National Movement as a government failed miserably in this particular exercise.
Yeah.
I am cognizant that this has, like you said, never occurred before in the history as we know it mm-hmm. of the Bahamas. The tragic news of lives lost to us was astronomical.
Mm-hmm.
But what I think we forget is the humanity of the Member of Parliament and the government officials at this particular time. I do not think that there was any one of us in the Bahamas who was not amazed or struck. It was as if God himself had turned his back on our beloved country.
Yeah.
And we didn't know our hair from our tail. Yet, the Bahamian people expected results from you immediately, as if you were not yourself going to be in shock. As if you didn't have family members that may have been lost, or you do not have a heart for the people of Abaco. So I'm going to ask you, do you really truly have a heart for the people of Abaco?
God, when I came back to Nassau to my family about 8 days after the storm had passed, because I was in Abaco surrounded by people in the road, realized that as a minister of the government and a foreign minister, the international community is asking for me, asking for my whereabouts. The Americans came and verified that I was alive. I don't talk that story much. I realized that, you know, here we are on our own almost, mm-hmm. struggling, and I got to come back and do my job. My wife threatened to put me out because I myself didn't realize the amount of post-traumatic stress that I had gone under. And I say this to people, you know, as a Bahamian man.
Uh-huh.
I wept twice during or after.
Well, your wife can kick you out. You got to weep, man.
The first time I wept, the first time I wept was because I was on the island and all of my sisters and their family and my brother and their family, my brother, they were there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in the government complex and they were somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I didn't leave my responsibilities or my duties, which I felt were to my people in North Abaco. And then when I saw them after almost the third day, when I could get out of the government complex, I held on to them and I wept. The second time I wept was when we got up in an aircraft to leave. Then I determined I couldn't do any more there. I had to come back and do my job as the foreign minister. And looking back at my island, it was tough, my brother. It still remains tough. Did we get everything right? No. But did we get everything wrong? No, we didn't.
Give me a grade from A to F. What did you get?
A C.
You got a C. You got an average. Yeah. Yeah. If it were to occur again and you were given another opportunity to represent that constituency, do you think your C grade would improve somewhat because of your previous experience?
Tremendously. I would somehow physically remove people from the island, from danger. The way we did in the southern Bahamas. Remember the one that we had before Dorian?
Mm-hmm.
In 2018, we evacuated the southern Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have mandatory evacuation orders in the Bahamas.
We don't.
And so we will have to come in and forcibly ask people to leave. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that we need to put on our agenda. Michael Pintard went through the storm. I went through the storm. Kwesi Thompson went through the storm. Aaron Lewis went through the storm. We lived this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to find a way to do this thing better. I don't believe either, and I don't want to digress from your point, that island administrators ought to be left to manage such catastrophic events. These are administrators.
These are book
people and accountants.
You're talking like a diplomat, man. Right?
No.
I believe that
we should have trained emergency managers
sent
to these islands ahead of these storms, as we did in the Defense Force,
uh-huh.
when we sent people ahead, which we call QRFs, Quick Reaction Forces, to clear runways, to clear roads, so that emergency vehicles...
Your firm belief.
This is my belief. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the recommendations I made to Wayne Neely, who wrote a wonderful book.
I know Wayne Neely. I know his family. Great guy.
Who wrote a wonderful book post Dorian. Yeah. So we have some things that we can improve on. The issue with food, that's nonsense. There's no way that I'm going to sit there and watch food rot that could feed my sisters and their children, right? My own relatives and their children, my family. Mm-hmm. The wood that was left there was wood remaining behind, and I say this all the time from the domes when they were constructing them.
Yes.
And, you know, I say this publicly. I stole the wood.
Mm-hmm.
And I have receipts to show you that I stole the wood. You know why I did that? Because I wanted the wood to help restore the homes of my people. And I said to the security, I'm going to send people to you to collect wood. And all I want you to do is make a receipt. I was reported to the prime minister for that. I told the person who was going to report, I said, well, they'll lock me up.
Leadership.
They'll lock me up. But this wood got to go to help my people. And that's what I did.
Don't worry, people. I just had to hush my friend Ruben Ramney. Join us in the room. You know, Ruben always ready. But
there was a boat sent to Grand Key a day before the elections.
How far is Grand Key from the mainland?
Oh, 30 miles.
Wow.
Right? Thereabouts. Maybe a little bit more. And it was about an hour by speedboat. And I thought to myself, why would Darren Henfield, a man who joined the Defense Force at 18, served this country all his life, became a member of Parliament through the grace of God.
Yes.
Wait till election day, the day before election, and say, you know who sent the wood, the Rotary or one of them? But I couldn't get ahead of that story anymore, man. I couldn't get ahead of that story anymore, you know. So I said, you know what? I just have to trust that my people know me better than this.
But you know what? Strangely enough, and your good friend, Senator Ruben Ramey, just joined us in the room. But, you know, we're going to get to Ruben and others in a few minutes. But Ruben Ramey, when he spoke to us, showed us the humanity of being a member of Parliament. We always feel like, number one, even though you say you only get $20,000 a year, we still believe you all have so many perks and so much advantages and so many benefits that of course, you know, you live lavishly. We look at the suits that you wear, and your suits are always well tailored. I try to rob you of that shirt on the way in here.
It can fit. You can have it.
You know. But what I'm amazed at after the loss of the Free National Movement is the humility by so many of the people in the party. Mm-hmm. I personally do not feel as if the public relations in terms of what efforts were made in that particular administration was ever properly brought to the surface. And I see the same things even happening now. I don't know if they're doing anything at all. I've said on the radio numerous times on another show at this particular station that 3 years of doing absolutely nothing, because that's what I see. Even if something is happening, no one really truly knows about it. Now, when I listened to Ruben, we were all in this room right here, and we were taken back. We're like, what in the world? Oh, he's doing all of that? Because on the street, we always talk about, oh, the woman talk about he gave us dirt for food. Then you talk with other fellow, talk about 0000000. And everything was a joke. Everything is comedy when it comes to, especially elections. But no one remembers the good that you do. Nobody remembers the sacrifice that you make. People feel that because you are a member of parliament, you have a beautiful wife, you have wonderful children, but you got enough money to have 2 and 3 sweetheart, that you fellas are like almost like demigods.
I don't expect
to have that conversation today on the mic. But understand that we have created a character reference for those people that we see in the House of Assembly. Even so, now this week, what we saw, we'll get to that in just a few minutes. But I just wanted the people to hear your side as to what happened, because I'm almost certain that we were shortchanged when it came to exactly what transpired in North Abaco. Because even so, now I'm looking at North Abaco, and the last question I'm going to put to you is this. If you were, not because of political affiliation, but if you were to either benchmark or you were to give a grade right now as to the development or the restoration of North Abaco as it is now, which used to be, in my eyes, the second strongest economy in the archipelago of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, where would you now put North Abaco?
75% recovered.
75% recovered. Is that a good thing or bad thing?
It is a good thing based on where we came from for such a short period of time, but that's given the fact that this government, since coming to office over 3 years now, has done nothing to help that.
Who has done that restoration as you now know it?
We did. We did along with NGOs, the FNM, along with NGOs. Remember now, we had a huge amount of debris that we had to remove. Right? Mm-hmm. A huge amount of debris.
Someone had that debris contract?
Million. Yeah, well, it was spread out among our people.
Why you only give me nothing?
But
anyway, that's a talk for different time.
Yeah, it's a talk for different
time. Yeah, you don't give me nothing. But go ahead.
We had to restore power.
Yeah.
We had to restore water.
Yes.
We wanted to.
I heard Kai Mills talking about how you only got no water and stuff like that over there. You remember that?
Yeah, but you know, after a storm, I don't think some parts of Puerto Rico get water yet. or if you really look at it, even Florida.
Yes.
Which just had a minor storm compared to what we
So we're expecting Dorian. Miracles from our fellow men.
You know, Bahamians have a right for them to anticipate that those whom they elect will respond with the urgency.
Yes.
That they need. When people are in distress, we still have people, Garth, that are living in homes that are not, do not have the integrity that they need to have. Thank God we went through another storm season without having to deal with a storm, right? We left in place, right, monies to help our people to recover. We judged the damage from, say, $2,500 all the way up to $10,000 for people who didn't have insurance, home insurance, right, to help them with their recovery efforts. This government has done nothing about that. A group out of Baker's Bay had promised me, that they would build 50 homes in Central Abaco and give them to the people of Abaco gratis. Before we left office, they built 5 that were not completed, and they remain where we left them. I spoke about it recently, and I saw some movement. I built or assisted with the building of at least 6 homes that people don't really know about.
Yeah, we don't know about these things.
No. There was a home given to us in Blackwood, where my mom is from, where my mom was born, given to Anne Cornish, right? It was given to us, assisted by the Beck Group. Prime Minister, Minister and I were there to help with that. Even since the storm, there's a young woman who lives just outside of Great Sistan. She's a single leg amputee, whom we are helping to build her home. She sent me some pictures the other day. She said, "Darren, when you're here, come look to see what you helped us to do, right?" So we never stop trying to help our people.
And you're still working now, even though you're not a member of parliament for North Africa.
Absolutely. You get calls all the time. You still
it doesn't
know,
stop.
You still know people in government. If you assist someone with procurement of a passport, to help someone walk through some bureaucratic process, to help someone with a meal, you're there and you're helping. It's not about whether you're in government or not. It's so about far, how my mother raised us, right?
So far, we have a young son of the soil, Darren Henfield, now serving as Senator, Free National Movement in the House. If you want to have a question or a conversation with him, we're going to allow you to do so. Just give us a call at 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, anywhere from the Family of Ireland, 300-5720, or please give us a text if you're that type of shy person or on the job, 422-4796. I got a whole lot of energy in this room, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to take a break as yet because I want to get to my cousin, Brian Brown, all the way from the deep south, all the way from where we don't have no wild snakes and no wild dogs like that, where the soil is rich for agriculture, where it's only about 300 people, where we got the longest runway in the Bahamas, but, you know, we need one decent airport down there. But, you know, I never been there, but I come from there, you know. When I came out of the womb, the first thing I said, I didn't cry. I looked at the doctor and I said, "Mayor Guara." That's what I said. So, Brian Brown, you are a young man who has been extremely active in the Golden Isles constituency, not only in the organization that you're now a part of, but definitely I have personally seen you on the road. So it's not just that you're my family and my cousin. I've seen you working on the road in the Golden Isles constituency. Your name is throughout the constituency. You have served under previous members of parliament in a strategic way. And I understand that even now you're offering yourself once again, as you did in the last election, to do some representation, as it were, to make the Golden Isles constituency a place where we all can live better. Brian Brown, introduce yourself, sir.
Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon, gentlemen. First of all, I want to say to the resident of Golden Isles, good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here today. Yes, I am Brian Brown. Here, been around in the Golden Isles constituency for the past 24 years. Lives in Golden Isles, and so I'm not a stranger to the Golden Isles constituency. I came around in the constituency, the late part of Frank Watson, early part of Charles Maynard. And Charles saw me at some point and asked me, "Brian, I think you could be an excellent chairman for me." And so I thought about it and I said, "Listen, let me go ahead and give it a shot."
You remember yourself or you remember us?
Well, I was worried with my pension force.
So you're honest, you're transparent.
I got to make sure I live even beyond politics.
You ain't no Messiah.
Because you know how politics is, right?
And I ain't getting nothing all my life.
You have an idea.
I ain't got no pension, you know.
Once you're out, you know what can happen.
I've been out.
You've been out?
Yeah, I ain't getting in yet.
Let's see what happens.
But I see cousin, you know.
Yeah, well, you my cousin.
So I ain't begging those Christmas, though. Merry Christmas.
We're going to work together, okay?
Brian, the reason why I brought you here today, because like I said, you're a hardworking gentleman. There's some concerns that I personally have, because I also live in your constituency. We see the burning of coal. We see issues like the removing of the mangroves. The mangroves really, really concern me, as Senator Darren Henfield just spoke about disaster preparedness, his experience on the Defense Force. He would understand the importance of these mangroves. I've seen the ecosystem of the Golden Isles constituency change right before my eyes, like night and day. It's horrific. I understand that there has to be room for advancement. There has to be room for development. We are the home to great organizations and companies like Albany. You know, we have numerous individuals who have financial well-to-do being moving into our constituency on a daily basis. The traffic is horrendous in the morning. I don't know why. It's like going downtown Bay Street all of a sudden. So the smog that's there now and the lack of all of the coniferous trees, the pine trees, the well fields are all now seeming to be being depleted. What's really going on in Golden Isles? And if you have acknowledged what I'm talking about, do you have any information for us, any plans for us, any restorative ideas for us? Because I am a bit timid and a bit frightened, to be honest with you, as to the future of the Golden Isles constituency.
Well, God, I'm both of us have the same idea in terms of the future for Golden Isles. The burning of the coal, I was doing a walkabout in Poland Division number 8, and that's a serious issue. I've been in contact with the minister, the environmental department, and they're telling me it's a police issue, and the police telling me it's a Ministry of Environment issue, okay? We need to get this all sorted out for those residents. Even in the Coral Heights Vista and the Coral Heights East, we got the same problem. So Golden Isles have the same problem with that coal issue that is burning. All right. I spoke with the overseer in charge of Michael, and they promised to look at in reference to it and get that sorted out. And most of the concern that we have, even in terms of the water issue, if you're going through the main Coral Harbor, even in the Coral Harbor area, you could tell you Coral Lakes and all of those areas, we have a water issue in terms of getting that water when it rains.
Okay.
People in Via Della Rosa, Coral Harbor, and that, it's an issue.
So you have identified these issues and you are putting together a plan to solve these issues, or these are just situations that you've acknowledged?
We are putting a plan. I'm a part of the Coral Heights Eats Homeowners Association. We are working with the Homeowners Association down there to put a plan together to make sure we have this resolved as soon as they elect me as their member of parliament.
So you got elected as a member of parliament?
Well,
I said, because I can give you a little bit of trouble, man.
You can give me a little bit of trouble. That's fine. I'm from Meghwana. No rebuild.
You from Meghwana. You ain't come through Meghwana.
Darren is an island boy.
They took some Caicos people from here down there.
Yeah, so we tough. We build for back.
So let me ask you this. See, I'm trying to go look quickly because, you know, Ruben right there, boy, listen, we can have a powerful show today. Let me say this to you. I am baffled, totally perplexed. Mm-hmm. We live in the back. What is it, in the back of God's back, or God's back, or whatever y'all call it in the Bahamas, eh? I mean, we go to almost at a point of no return when we live out there, like a family island. I watch these children wake up 5:30 in the morning to get on a bus to go to school to Anatole Rogers and to go to Aaron Bailey near Valley, you know. First thing in the morning. Now, we talk about kidnapping, people missing, people molesting these children. The sun is not up yet, and these children walk in the street to go to school.
Yeah.
Who has the vision to put a school... All that pine field in the back there, man.
Golden Isles, there's one school in this Adelaide. That's the primary school. There's no.
And all y'all driving past my house every day, smoking up my house. Why y'all can't put a school somewhere else? That school has been there since we had Harriet Tubman and we had the rest of these people them coming in slave ship on Clifton Pier.
Yeah.
So when y'all going to move that from the residential area that we have there, and y'all going to make sure these children can get to a place where you can have schools, you can have firehouses, where you can have a proper library, urban renewal development centers, a proper clinic that you ain't got to rent there in Adelaide. When you can do these things? Is this a part of Brian Brown's future initiative?
Know, the FNM is known for building schools. The PLP don't know anything about that. Okay, we could talk about the ones Hubert Ingram built, and we could go on in it. So we will have a school, and we will talk with the next prime minister, that when we put our manifesto together, we make sure that there is a school for the Golden Isles constituency.
Yes.
We need a police station down there.
Yes.
A police station in Carmichael, take care of Golden Gates, all over down in St. Vincent Road. And when you call, they're saying, we can't make it right now because of this and that. We need a police station in Golden Isles.
Yeah, the growth.
Let me not only the growth, that you're talking about your transportation. The poor kids from Adelaide, there's no bus to get them from Adelaide uptown.
No.
Coral Harbor have to stand on the corner to get a ride to find Bacardi Road to get the bus. We need to fix the bus system. We need to fix
public
the bus
transport,
system.
Yes.
Not only that, the environment problem we got in the water is now on the main road across right from the Member of Parliament Church. As they cut, listen to me. As they cut the pines, the water decided to come in the road, and you know what happened to it. Mr. Vaughan Miller is the Member of Parliament for the Environment.
Well, you disgusting. Go ahead.
Can I tell you?
Uh-huh.
We had meetings with him that he would get back to us. Well, you know, that ain't gonna get back no time soon.
You know what's amazing?
Did I tell you?
You served under Vaughan Miller as chairman, and now you're running against him. And you should have had a close relationship with Vaughan Miller to get some of these things fixed. Why he's not listening to you?
Listen to me.
Or is it just a PLP FM thing?
Listen to me. Vaughn on general, he ain't listening to, so you think he can listen to me? Come on, man, God. You live in Golden Isles. And I know you had several conversations with him. Glenn lived there in Poland Division 7. You're in Poland Division 1.
I could tell you. Me and Frankie Morrison just finished talking with you. But I can say this to you. Whenever I get ready to make something happen, this will lock me up. That's why I ain't do nothing yet.
Well, Mr. Brown will make things happen.
You can pay my bill? You got the pension, right?
I can make sure things happen for the resident.
Brian Brown, I believe you have a good heart. I believe that you want to do some great things for the constituency, not because you're my cousin, but because I've seen your hard work. I've seen your dedication. I've seen the commitment. Even my good cousin Mavis Vanderpool, she loves you to death. I don't know how Mavis loves you so much. She don't like me that much, you know.
Listen, the senior woman just loved me.
Lord.
That's the senior woman.
But listen,
she's the senior woman.
Folks, I have an overloaded studio today. I want to give out these numbers and take a quick break, but let me give out the numbers first, and then I got to let all the testosterone go in this room because, but these gentlemen, now who feel as if they don't want to say anything out of the way and they may get in trouble, the door right there, you could leave because we get all the way to the top of the mountain. We're going to get these Ten Commandments for the Bahamas, bring it down, and when we leave out of here, we want this thing to be right. 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. Anywhere from the Family of Violence, 300-5720, or text us at 422-4796. Producer, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
That can give you quality health care at discounted rates. Unlock affordable health care with Doctors Hospitals LAMP. Enjoy unlimited primary care visits, exclusive discounts of up to 20%, and complimentary imaging and nutrition services. Visit doctorshosp.com/LAMP to register. Comprehensive, cost-effective wellness starts with LAMP.
This Christmas, Fidelity Bank is still the one. One easy monthly payment, the only one with a quick approval, and one chance to win an extra $5,000 in cash. Apply for a personal loan today for your chance to win big. Call 356-7764 for more details and make that move to Fidelity Bank today.
Fidelity, we're good for you.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Girl, Junior just showed me Bulla Boy in his phone.
What you mean? He take picture of that good-for-nothing boy?
Shh, you don't want Bulla hair. You say that. You know she always say that's my good child.
So what he doing in Junior phone?
Oh, he there because the police looking for him. He on that wanted list.
Wanted persons in your phone now?
Yes, child. And when police want find anybody quick, after something happened, they can send picture direct to your phone. Go to Google Play or App Store and search for Crack Crime Bahamas, then pick install and it will go straight to your phone.
There is also a section on missing persons.
Yes, girl. Everybody needs to get this app so police can tell us right away when these people go missing. Just like like an alert system.
Yes, it has numbers for Crime Stoppers Bahamas, so you can call and nobody knows it's you. Call directly to Miami and give the information without giving your name or anything about you. I tried the other day, and when I hear Junior and his boys talking about where they hide those guns, I walk quick round the corner and call that number.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
Ooh, yeah.
All right, folks, we are back. We are back. And listen, I need you to put it on today. Do not hold back. I need to know what you're thinking. I was scheduled to appear on a show earlier this week, and I got a call that I was requested downtown Bay Street. And I was told that the mace was thrown out of the window. And I'll be very frank with everyone listening today, as well as my guest in the studio, my co-host Darvin Russell is with me, and joined with by Mr. Glenroy Pratt, my very, very good friend. So, you know, y'all can throw rocks at me all you want. I say, so what? Now, I understand the significance of the mace. Don't think I'm ignorant. Don't think I don't understand how powerful of a symbol it should be. But in my mind, my concern is that of the next generation as to how serious are they about the House of Assembly? How serious are they even about a mace? What does it mean to them? What does protesting truly mean when we have third parties that go down and create a circus every so often? And no one seems to be speaking about the things that are really important to the citizenry of the Bahamas. And one of those real things that I consider that we should have been speaking volumes about, maybe I am, you know, oblivious to what has happened in the past through the efforts of the men, even in this room, but job creation. You know, where are the foreign investors? I know Senator Henfield, he was a part of the Immigration and Foreign Affairs Ministries. Where are these foreign investors who should be visiting our shores to take advantage of our geographical location? For those who could remember, Long Key, right off of Acklands, used to be the economic hub of the Bahamas. I don't think many people know that. Everything coming through Panama stopped in Long Key before it went over to Florida. Big time hub. I mean, big money. Someone had the idea to move the hub, and therefore many people were lost in that effort. That's why Auckland's people, they're so strong business-wise. Long Key is right there. These were the business people of the Bahamas, and they still remain the strong business people of this country. And so I say this to you today, gentlemen. The antics that took place, or the efforts that took place, was it merited? Is it something that we should see often in terms of fighting for democracy in our country? How did it make you feel? And where do we go from here? But I just want to introduce my co-host with you. If I don't introduce him, boy, I'm in trouble. Darvin Russell, you know, that's the walking man. That's my man. The wannabe beekeeper Reuben Ram, because he said he ain't a fool with that no more. But Darvin's one of the more intelligent young men of our country. I appreciate him. Many people listen to him. They love him. And I do think that he is one of the men in this country that is deserving of an opportunity to serve at the high table. Sorry, Darvin Russell.
Good evening, Bahamas. Good evening to the panel. I was actually downtown along with many other supporters on earlier this week. And I think what struck me, there were a couple of things that I think are worth mentioning. One, I was surprised with the level of police presence that was downtown, that I thought it felt to me a bit unnecessary, to say the least. And what ended up happening as a result of that, I think, was a ruckus that I don't think was warranted. So then the parliamentary caucus went into the House eventually, and I had left because I had a competing meeting that morning, and then my phone started blowing up about all the other stuff that you mentioned regarding the throwing of the mace out. Yes, you're right that in 2024, the mace is more a symbolic presence than its significance back when Pinling did it. But I think it represented the same kind of civil disorder and disobedience that's needed today. We are, sadly, it feels, back to 1991, and it has taken our country all of the 20 plus years to get our reputation back for it to be lost in 1 week. It was a distressing week for me personally as a Bahamian, because I am a man, come from a family of men and women that were raised with integrity, just like many of the men in this room with me tonight, and many of the Bahamians listening to us across this radio station. It's troubling to me that we allow the behavior of a few to taint the character of the many. And what was particularly troubling was that a prime minister who clearly seemed to not be informed as to what was going on, the level of investigation, the level of scrutiny that our Royal Bahamas Police and Defense Force were under, at the highest levels, he still chose at the end of the day not to go, as far as I was concerned, and many Bahamians, far enough in the removing of the people who either were derelict in their duty or complicit in these acts. And I find that disturbing, to say the least. I don't think that we are at the point yet where my anger has been sufficiently assuaged. I don't think that the Prime Minister has done enough to restore our reputation. I would like to congratulate the new Commissioner of Police, and I pray for her safety, well-being, and her success. But more needs to be done. And I think the Bahamian people are waiting with bated breath for more to be done. And if they don't get more done, they'll hear from us in 2026, if not sooner.
Okay, then, Senator Darren Headfield, you took some time to go to Abaco last week. I think you had to attend a funeral. And you returned to us, and you've heard of all the news of corruption and involvement by high-ranking officials and military men, and then the mace goes through the window. How does Darren Headfield feel today about his government? How do you feel about the future of our government? And do you see any recourse in terms of our behavioral patterns? Or do you feel that the country's just spiraling downward and there's no...
I wish to begin, Garth, by adopting the comments of my brother, Russell.
Yes.
Who feels as I do. We understand the iconoclast of politicians like Sir Lyndon and Sir Milo, and we understand if you read Sir Lyndon's bio by Dr. Michael Creighton, we understand Cecil Wallace Whitfield. He wasn't sure whether or not it was Cecil Wallace Whitfield or Loftus Roker who suggested mace be tossed out of the window. Mm-hmm. But what is the difference in the circumstances in which they found themselves?
Please tell.
Where you have a government that is oppressive, refuses to allow the opposition to have a say in the House of Parliament, as if we are in an autocracy, what kind of country are we building? We appreciate the Westminster system, we appreciate democracy, that the government will have its way, but my God, man, let the couple of people in there from the minority have a say. And then you can still go ahead and do what you need to do, you know. So I believe our parliamentary colleagues, and I was downtown, as Brother Russell said, the leader and his parliamentary caucus, inclusive of some senators, the only one was missing was Ruben, who was away. We attempted to go and greet supporters, and we were very heavily handed by the police officers. And we hope not to see that again in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, because, I mean, you can manage your crowd control a little bit better than the heavy-handedness that we felt. You saw what took place after in the House of Assembly, mm-hmm. where we were. I mean, physically manhandled and dragged in some instances, dragged downstairs and tossed out of the House, the precincts of Parliament, simply because we wanted to participate in the democratic process. Now, I hear all of this talk about the way our speaker handled things in the House. I didn't like it then. And I spoke out against it then privately to members opposite who would speak to me.
Yes.
And I would do what I could internally to assist easier going in the House of Assembly, and Ruben can attest to this. And so if you didn't like it then, why are you doing it now? Why are you oppressing democracy now? Because you have the numbers to do so. And the Bahamian people are watching.
Mm-hmm.
Bahamians are feeling that they don't have the respect of their voice. They elected the minority members to go to the House of Assembly, you know. Those members represent Bahamians. And this government must appreciate that it has been elected by the lowest number of voter turnout in the history, I believe, of the Bahamas.
Yes.
Yes.
I think it wasn't 40%. So how do you feel so confident that you can act like a tyrant in the House of Assembly and not allow the democratic process to play out?
Let's hear this call. Is a caller, go ahead.
Hey, Garth. It's Nico. How are you?
What have they been asking for? You couldn't find you. See, you can't find Jerry Roca in town.
It's a Sunday, man. Why are you giving me a hard time? Anyway, much respect. The show is great, as usual. And I just have to chime in. I was just driving home and listening to the concern of your learned panel. The police force, as far as I'm concerned, it's an unregulated body with substandard educated individuals. And what transpired on this black day that the speaker spoke about was more than heavy-handed. The question now becomes is, what is the police force? Are the police force here to serve and protect? Or is the police force there to suppress? I think it's the latter. You're treated as, when you walk into a police station, I have to do it frequently as a result of my profession. And the service that you actually get is disgusting. The moment a uniform is put on, these individuals, they go through 6 months of training where the more advanced societies around the world require 3 years of training and college degrees and the like. We don't have that ability. Resources or otherwise. So people come out of high school without degrees or whatever the case may be, and they're thrust into a role of to serve and protect and not understanding the law. What transpired? The gentleman, maybe your panelists can answer this for me. I don't know who he is, but did you see the manner in which Adrian White was manhandled, quote-unquote, from one of your panelists just speaking, and then also the deputy of the opposition were handled?
Okay, we have, thank you so much, Mr. Moscow. We have a former military serving some of the soil with us, serving as a senator presently, Senator Darren Henfield, former member of parliament for North Abaco. I'm going to allow him to answer that.
Let me begin by saying this. I believe that we have very educated, very well-trained professional officers in the Royal Bahamas Police Force and likewise in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot allow them to be overshadowed by the one or two bad actors that we might find in these organizations from time to time. And we must always remember that members of these organizations represent a microcosm of our society, our communities.
Yes.
And so, yes, we have some more work to do, and the way that our officers may be socialized and the way that they interact with the public. We have some work to do in that regard. But I will not sit here and allow a brush to be painted over the entire organization.
Mm-hmm.
Who these people serve with most of them, 90% of them serve with integrity, with honesty, mm-hmm. and to the best of their ability to keep us safe in this country. And they represent as well when they go off around the world.
I think we all have gotten a bad brush with
but you cannot deny, Garth. Mm-hmm. You cannot deny. And whilst this melee was going on Bay Street, I am well known to many of the senior officers. Mm-hmm. And I was able to speak with them up close and personal and negotiate with them and implore them to be more careful. We understand that you have to carry out your duties. We appreciate what your job and your taskings are here at the moment. Mm-hmm. But remember that you are dealing with Bahamians. Mm-hmm. Remember that you are dealing with members of parliament, members of the community, members of the public whom you serve, right? Who are just trying to make a statement, not trying to be violent, just trying to exercise a democratic and constitutional right to gather and to have their voices heard.
But I want to jump on that a minute too. Next caller, go ahead, please. Appreciate you.
How you doing today?
Doing good. Go ahead.
And good afternoon to your esteemed guest. Just for clarification, with the mace not in House of Assembly, that makes whatever the speaker says is null and void, right?
Ruben Remy?
Help me understand. So the instructions she gave when she asked the opposition to leave or asked the officers to take the deputy lead out, that was a null and void order. If I'm made to understand that she has no authority without the mace.
Okay, I'm gonna let Ruben Rabin.
So help me understand that, please.
Okay. Thank you for your call, man. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, Mr. Rabin.
Yeah, the mace is ceremonial, it's a symbol of that is something that can be debated in court and you would have a strong argument, but in actuality the authority is vested in the speaker. However, the mace is
the
symbol. It's the symbol of which. Now, being there with the mace in hand, the practice is that the house cannot be properly...
Continue.
No, cannot be properly in the quorum set up or start because it represents that symbol. However, if the symbol is gone, it is reasonable to say that the authority remains. The thing about it is that we have a speaker and it's clear from the actions that happen, who don't fully understand her power, and she sees her power ceremonially and is probably ignorant of her powers actually. Well, because should she had, her first job is to protect this precinct and its members. And let's remind the people, you know, everyone that house is not PLP and FNM. As far as the house is concerned, you represent the people. That's why the Prime Minister is not called Prime Minister in the House. He's Prime Minister outside the House, so he's actually Prime Minister. He's the member for Cat Island. And if he wasn't a member for Cat Island, he would not have been Prime Minister. Anyone who is in that House that is a member for anything can qualify with popularity to become the Prime Minister. If they want to right now, the majority choose Michael Pintad and he become Prime Minister right now. End of story. We don't vote for Prime Ministers. However, this shows that it disqualifies her. Actually, it is a proper representation why we should have a vote of no confidence against her for putting the whole house at risk. Let me clear this up. I support the International Police Force from the deputy commissioner and all those down. These guys, we pump a lot of money into them, training them. You'd be surprised to know their level of qualification. But actually, it's because of their qualification that their actions is beneath them and also what they represent. Now, if they were, as the caller called, and I'm paraphrasing, done gross, then I would treat them totally differently. They know better than this. Because you saw two totally different actions. Everyone is equal in that house. There was one person that was sanctioned in the house. All right? At that time of sanctioning, there's something that I learned in criminal justice called de-escalation. And this is why I'm ashamed of our police force and our police department. They, at that time, the mace was already out the window. At the time when they finished looking out the window, the men were gathered standing up peacefully. There was absolutely no need for force. That's like you coming at somebody in a fisticuff with a rifle. Mm-hmm. You understand? I know about it in the States because I studied criminal justice in the States. If somebody is breaking into your house and they turn around when you come with that shotgun, they're back towards you and they're fleeing, you shoot him, that's murder. Mm-hmm. He's not coming at you anymore. You understand? If this is why I asked around into my understanding, we don't even have that kind of proper level of training. So it's same. I've been asking, it's not solidified yet. That they should know you don't escalate. You don't pull a gun on somebody that is just charging unless you're a very pint-sized person and your life is in jeopardy.
I had a question about that.
I want you to grasp this, Scott, because this is very, very important.
Go quickly, because we got to call in the line.
No, see, it's the meat of it.
Go ahead.
Why the speaker needs to have a no confidence vote. All she had to do to avoid harm in that place in the precinct, all she had to do was stand up, adjourn the house.
That's it.
Bam! That's end the story. Everybody can leave.
That's it.
And if Michael Pintard and the deputy don't want to stay there all night and sleep,
that's it.
That's them. Mm-hmm. You see, that should not have had to be a cause for the melee. And these men understand that these police officers, they're supposed to salute every member of parliament when they see them, you know.
Well, I had questions about
see,
that.
See, no, that's just authority in the practice. See, the lawmaker and the law enforcer, that's the order of hierarchy in there. Quite frankly, the police commissioner does not have carriage over the House of Assembly. The House of Assembly appoints its sergeants of arms that have carriage over that in the precincts. You saw with the riots in the United States. The president himself couldn't send the National Guard to help them without the Speaker of the House giving them authority to come in that place because the House is independent. That is why we have something called a black rod. Can't come in the executive and bulldoze the executive. And they, the police, showed no tact. They could have stood there, still respect the other members who were just standing, whether you like it or not. They weren't acting offensive. They weren't acting aggressive. And then you drag them out. You know what that makes me understand now? Why we need to have a public commission now following our police department. You can imagine that other people who report about being beaten in jail, beaten in these different places because police get hyper and dying in police custody. If you could do that to a government leader, a next prime minister, the leader of the official opposition, you know who runs this country? The prime minister and the leader of the opposition. That makes governance. If you don't got a leader of the opposition, you don't have a government.
But the police shouldn't be put in that position. There's political
oversight
of the police
force.
I just said this could be put in that position.
They should not be put in that position. Ruben, there's a pin. McCauley there. They on the data. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, caller. Go ahead, caller. I got to let you talk. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hey, sounds like Erica.
No, this is Priscilla.
Oh, Priscilla. How you doing, Priscilla?
Yes. You know, I'm sitting here, and today I'm calling as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm listening, and I highly respect Mr. Ramey. But, you know, for you to say to have a vote of confidence against the Speaker of the House, she broke no rule. Okay? She broke not one rule. And this is where it comes that we need, when you advocate for women and having respect for women on the job. If we watch the same proceeding, after the prime minister spoke and Ken told us about the resignation of the COP, then the member for Freetown got up. And if I want someone to correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't it at her discretion if they could speak or not? And you know what they kept doing? Well, can we speak? She says, give me a chance. Let the member for Freetown finish what you asked for. Because we asked for what the member of Freetown was going to give. She said, let me finish. But I just need to know. Oh, she was vacillating. And she had the right to do that. Because to this day, I still don't understand why the mace was thrown out. Because you know what? Michael Pintard kept saying, but Madam Speaker, it is your discretion. Yes, it is. Yes, it was. So me, personally, had they sat down and waited for her, like she said, when I get to that point, I will let you know if I can speak. This is at my discretion. So right now, we will never know whether or not she was going to let them speak. And I'm speaking as a woman. And you're going to say to have a vote of no confidence towards her because she was doing her job? She was following the rules?
Well, thank you.
I have a problem with that.
She was not.
Because to me, there were three things that the FNM asked for. For the COP to resign. For them to have to bring a bill of an independent investigation, okay? And they wanted other people. They had started the process. So why would we, that mace, because to me, that mace should have never gone out the window. Because you can't say it's because she didn't let them speak. Again, she had that discretion. Go back and listen to the video. You will hear she was vacillating. She never told them no. She never said, no, you can't speak. So on this day, we would never know. So okay. As a woman, I felt she was highly disrespected.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Priscilla.
Thank you.
All right. Go ahead, Glenroy Pratt. You want to respond to Priscilla?
Yeah. Good afternoon, Bahamas. One of the challenges is with the comments, and I understand and appreciate the comments, right? But the reality of it is when you look over a collection of issues over a period of time, national issues, that the Bahamian people's voice have been silenced on, when the reality of it is these issues have been burning in the hearts of the Bahamian people. They seem to not have a voice of individuals who can represent their feelings and challenges that they had with the issues that were transpiring. And this has been going on for weeks on end, where the speaker has been seemingly taking control of the House and not allowing a public discourse on the issue that is relevant to the Bahamian people and the challenges the Bahamian people are facing. And so when people speak about the fact that whether she was right or wrong, they're not looking at a collection of issues, not this just one incident. The challenges that we have seen with this whole incident was, as a Bahamian, because we haven't had our voices represented where international news has been picking it up. And it's ironic that international news pick up the fact that we had a group of Bahamians who stood up and said, listen, we are not okay with corruption in our country. We are not okay with high-ranking officials participating in corrupt practices. Mm-hmm. What that does is that shows that, hey, listen, that country at least has some people in there who believe in righteousness and who believe in conducting themselves in a manner that is befitting of the citizens of this country. So when you sit down and don't do nothing and don't say anything as a leader, and when I say leader, when the government of the day don't sit down and identify and remove the people responsible, as was stated previously, and we don't do that, what it does, it sends a message internationally that these people in general are okay with the level of corruption that is being seen in their country, and there's nobody who's standing up against it. And so in this incident, again, I stand on the principle of saying that the speaker was not allowing the persons in the House, the opposition, to speak on the Bahamian people's behalf, because there are quite a few Bahamians, I included, who was disgusted by what was transpiring and the fact of our voices not being heard. And I appreciate the fact that the opposition stood and represented me just like other Bahamians.
Wonderful. Can I take the next caller quickly, please? Go ahead, caller. Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Yes, Mr. Rami.
Hey, how you doing?
Fine, thank you. Listen. I was listening to the lady just now, right?
Uh-huh.
And what she was saying kind of make much no sense to me, because for the last 3 years we have been watching the play of the speaker concerning anything that the official opposition have to say. So we can take her by that. For the last 3 years, she don't give them an opportunity, a fair opportunity to speak. Okay? And then she tries to make it seem like she is the innocent victim here when something goes awry. So I said like she would, again, not allow them to speak as her per usual. So what Mr. Shannon Dawn did was he stood up and said, hello, not today. Okay, we're not going to just sit down, because I think the same lady called on Friday and she said they should have just gotten up and lock arms and demanded that she allowed them to speak. Which that would not have mattered to Mr. Moe, because her prior attitude showed us that she would not have cared.
I appreciate your call. Next caller, please. I got this whole line lit up. Go ahead. Next caller, please.
Yes, God. C. Allen Johnson. And hello to you. Wait. I don't know if I'm critical thing to or it. Yeah, no, let's go with C. Allen.
Give me a solid 3 minutes, boy, because this line's lit up. I know you're smart.
No, I know you're smart.
Give me a three. Go ahead.
There's two points. You asked the question, when I answered. But first, let me respond to Erica, I mean Priscilla. If she take the time to watch the speaker the week before and this week, Mr. Pintard got up before Rian Monroe did. The speaker acknowledged him. He never sat down or yielded. She then looked straight ahead, at the Prime Minister's home, and then she looked over to Freetown, and then she told Michael, "Relax, relax, relax. See, his voice, the order's voice up." When he was on his feet, she recognized him. She responded. That's the week before, right? Then let's come back to this week, okay? And it's not a woman, because if she want to use the concept of woman, she should be insulted and upset that the week before, the leader of the opposition did not get to speak on Women's Day. International Women's Day was denied the opportunity to speak to and for women in the House of Assembly. That is what she should be upset about, okay? Now, come to the present. When the speaker was speaking, she never looked at him. You just go watch the video. Mm-hmm. Even her speaker talk with being afraid, literally 44 seconds passed before she even realized the mace was gone. He was already at the window. See, it's not what you want to see. The video don't lie. And the disrespect was to the speaker when a simple question was asked, will I be allowed to speak at this? She says, I don't know. I'll see what I can do. Wait a minute. What do you mean? You, the speaker, make a decision. Now, let me get to the other point, right? Because the evidence is there. I don't care how somebody want to spin it. But let's get the evidence. You asked a question, but what you're not hearing. I'm not the official spokesman for the FNM. But as an FNM supporter, let me say, if the PLP was capable of doing this economy, and you used the expression foreign investor, the Free National Movement, the incoming Free National Administration, understands the reality of the new global reality, such as fintech, redtech, supertech, and whatever. It also understands that we need an inclusive opportunity and ownership economy, that behemoths must be included in the building of the economy and redefining tourism, redefining hospitality, financial service, banking, and all the various different industries that the Prime Minister has been running around the world talking about climate change, the climate economy, the carbon economy, the blue economy, the orange economy, the green economy, the ocean economy. Have you heard a single thing of how we are to do those things? And I'm asking you, if they know what to do, then why haven't they told us in 3 years? That they now going to come back to us and say, I knew all to do these things, but we'll do it next time? No. If you know what to do it, demonstrate it right now. And I say to you, the incoming Free National Administration understands the need for our economy to be digitized, for digitalization, datafication, and digital transformation to be competitive in the global marketplace, more specifically because of the policies Trump is bringing forward.
Thanks
we
a lot,
have no C. time Allen. To go back. We got to build forward.
With thanks, Michael
Allen. Thanks a lot, C. Allen. I got another call on the line. Quickly, go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm calling back. Yes.
Ms. Priscilla.
I have 2 points to make. The young lady that called in earlier, when I called in on Friday, I said that when the Prime Minister announced that the Commission of Police had resigned, that was an opportunity for the opposition to lock hands at that time and demand that the Minister of National Security resign also. Two, to C. Allen, yes, I am a woman, and I am more offended that the leader of the opposition knew that when he went in that day, that they were going to have some discussion about women and the violence against women. He should have had the letter dated properly, and he should have had it in on time. See, I'm one of the few that listens to the House. And my thing is, because she explains it, she pulls out her book, and she says what the rules are. Okay? But we want to look over that. And the other thing, I don't care what she did in the past, because I will be the first one to tell you, I wanted her to be wrong. I wanted that woman to be wrong. Okay? But she wasn't. Because I don't care what she did in her past, if they were to take that to court, they're not going to look at what she did in the past. They're going to look at what she did that day. And she was well within her rights.
All right, thanks a lot then, Priscilla. Let me free up these lines. All right, thanks a lot, Priscilla. Thank you for calling and your support. Our next caller, please. Next caller, because we're running out of time, folks. Just a little
God,
off for that.
Let me say this.
The letter Mr. Pintar took was not to speak to the woman's issues. It was to speak to a matter of national importance. He had a right to speak to the woman's issues. The letter was to speak to the national issues. And listen to what she said. She says, when he said, I dropped this letter off earlier, an hour before, she says, well, I just got it at 9:30 or whatever else. No, it isn't when you get it, because nobody hands you a letter personally. That is handed to the clerk. Okay? And so I don't care the linguistic contortionistic intellectual masturbation that happens, reality doesn't change. All right,
thank you. Listen, Darvin Russell is sitting here to my right, my co-host. Darvin, I told you I had a surprise for everyone because we have a whole lot of stuff going on here. I still have not yet even made a comment, but I had to allow this to happen because Christmas is coming, Santa Claus is on his way, and I'm trying to squeeze in the brotherhood. You know, we are a brotherhood in here. It's not a PLBF&M thing. It's just a strong brotherhood, and I appreciate all these men taking the time out from their shopping and their family time to be here. Darvin Russell, what you've heard today, put in a synopsis for me. Let's see if we can make some sense of this. Darvin Russell.
Man, the studio is so hot today. I have to go get an ice bath when I'm done. Look, there's just so much going on in our country. And one of the things that I would caution people to take a step back and realize that two things can be true at the same time. It can be true, for example, that our police officers are not treating the citizens in the Bahamas correctly, respectfully. It can be true that some police officers are corrupt. It can also be true that we have well-trained police officers, the majority of whom are honest, hardworking individuals. These two things can be true. It is based off of your own personal experiences being involved with the police officers in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. I, for example, have had my home robbed 3 times. In the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Twice the police came, the third time they didn't. I have had vehicles in my rental fleet stolen. Immediate action by the police in that particular incident. Another incident, no action by the police or delayed action. My wife has had her purse stolen, broken out the window. No action by the police to this day. So look, we all have had a myriad of experiences with law enforcement. Traveled to Florida. Purse stolen out of the van, different experience. All of my belongings stolen from me in college in South Carolina, different experience with the police. So, look, we have to contextualize these issues that we face. We have to admit as a collective that the challenges we face in this country are significant. But the level that the problem is created on, you have to solve it now at a higher level. And I would submit that the people that we currently have holding the offices either don't have the capacity, the desire, or the will to solve these problems.
Excellent.
And as that is the case, I would submit that we need to change players and we have to turn the page. Happy holidays to everybody.
Well, you know, I'm going to give y'all a minute to just give some closing remarks. There are people asking for Ruben to come back and continue his speech. So, Ruben, I haven't forgotten you. I just want to get through these texts, though. These people have taken the time to text you.
Yeah.
They said, I feel like the whole incident with throwing out the mace was staged and that there was no real reason why it was done. The FNM does not encourage democracy within its own party. The party should sweep its own steps first before trying to sweep others. The next text says, Senator Henfield was a true soldier. Talking like you're gone already. You're still a soldier, eh? Said, Senator Henfield was a true soldier. But they explained himself. I'm only teasing.
Yeah.
A true soldier during Dorian. He stayed on the ground and warned the people before tragedy struck. He did a good job, and I'm grateful for his service.
Yes.
I've never seen the speaker present when former PM Minister gives the contribution. I could be wrong, but she seems to have a low tolerance for Dr. Minnis. That's the same texter. The next texter says that, good evening, gentlemen. Excellent show. The events that happened are despicable. What happened was entirely the speaker's fault. She is the worst one yet. She is very one-sided and shows her colors. Very unprofessional. The way she huffs and puffs. The police should be charged for the way they handled. Let's see what else they handled here. Boy, this one talking long. Ah, The MPs. I would like to commend Mr. Henfield for his service during Dorian and as an MP.
Yes.
Okay, that's another one for you, Senator Henfield.
Thank you.
Next text says, the PM could have avoided that, but he said nothing. I am proud of Mr. Cartwright. The Speaker even said, grab them. She has no class.
Get him.
This government always used the police to do their bidding. No need for all those police officers on Bay Street for a peaceful demonstration. I'm appalled. Boy, these people could type. You know, said they are appalled. I know what they're going to say now. No, it's not reading. It's just a long letter. And they're going to open up. Then it said the Speaker needs to go.
Yes.
They said the Speaker needs to go. Okay. Then you have another one here that says, the Speaker had no intentions of letting Mr. Pintard speak. That's what the people are saying here on the text line. Gentlemen, we have 5 minutes, but I got to let Ruben go last. Ruben is a closer. So I'm going to let start off with Mr. Brian Brown for Golden Isles, aspirin. Mr. Brian Brown, you want to say anything in closing, sir?
Gosh, you got to bring me back.
I still owe you, but we had to do this for Christmas. This the guys' club. We had to do this for Christmas.
I couldn't let
Glenn Roy down because Glenn Roy got to work next week, so he got to come this week.
Yeah.
You see the little jam I got myself in?
Yeah, but you got to get me back. What I want to say to the people of Golden Isles, I want to wish them a Merry Christmas and a prosperous and a bright new year. And what I want to say to the Free National, what we are doing is fighting for the people. This is not the FNM. This is we fighting for the people. And so as we gathered to make this country a better one, we're looking forward to be a better country as we fight.
Mm-hmm.
And this progressive little body look like they just I don't know what to say about this government. This is the worst ever.
Yes.
The worst ever that we've ever seen, God. And I've been around.
But maybe after this Christmas they'll do better, because maybe they'll do better.
Man, listen, we thought they would do better a long time. But they're on the way out now, so you know you still do change now.
All right, okay, Cousin Brown. Well, that's Brian Brown from Golden Isles, folks. Someone says the problem with Bahamian politics is we choose personality, police versus contesting among best leaders. All the names you call can't present a vision or strategy. Instead, they have nothing but talk on ideas. No vision or strategy to move us forward. Then they said, read Sir Lyndon book, and he says that when he threw the event that led to the mace being thrown was all staged. Sir Lyndon said it himself. I'm so happy that the mace was thrown out the window and not the speaker. Well, you know, Shakespeare says all the world's a stage, and all men merely players on the stage. Go ahead, Senator Henfield.
I just want to say Merry
Christmas.
People
loved you.
I just want to say Merry Christmas to everybody. I want to thank you for having me, and I believe this country, we are at an inflection point where we need political oversight of these organizations and institutions. Executives in this country, those who sit in the cabinet, the prime minister and others, cannot abdicate themselves of their responsibility. They must lead, and the prime minister must be the first among equals and lead. He started well when he fired the commissioner of police when he accepted his resignation.
Mm-hmm.
Bain Munro needs to go.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He had political oversight of the police force and the defense force. Yep. Crime is outrageous in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Bahamians don't feel safe. Bain Munro needs to do the honorable thing, as all we do in Westminster system, and step aside. That's what we're asking for. We're also asking for a commission of inquiry so that we can exonerate those good police officers and men and women who wear uniform and get rid of the bad apples that are spoiling the whole barrel. Thank you, God, for having us.
No problem, sir. No problem, my good senator. Listen, if you're interested in keeping the show on the air, you can contact The Guardian, 96.9 FM, April Moss, 302-2375. That's April Moss at 302-2375. Or contact Janet Lees at 302-2309. I am going to be distributing some letters so I can get my Christmas gifts or remark. So if we can stay on the air and keep you informed, keep you on top of the conversation, because guess what? The election is coming, but remark is here. I got the best team in the whole Bahamas, and I'm almost sure that we are able to break these things down. I got to bring the anchor man in. Glenn Roy, you want to say Merry Christmas to anybody in particular? And then Ruben is going to close us off.
Yeah, I just want to say two things. Merry Christmas to my family and my wife and the kids and everybody and my mother and father. But also want to say, again, a city without walls, like the good book says, is easily overtaken. And right now, we seem not to have any walls up, and our country is seemingly overtaken, and we need to build this wall back up to prevent what we have seen happen, and we need to restore what we know is law and order in this country. And currently, right now, the persons that lead the charge are not doing it, so we need to put the people in place to do it.
Thank you very much. Reuben Ramey, give us that closure, sir. Give us that closure. We have 2 minutes. Go ahead, Reuben Ramey.
We've got to keep this succinct as it relates to the House of Assembly. First of all, the action of the police force. There's a difference when you see the corporals and these other low-lying persons doing it and they embarrass the whole force. What if you see the action taken by the leadership of the force? What you saw demonstrated and executed in the House of Assembly against elected official who's supposed to be saluted by these persons coming into the precinct that is governed by his own enforcement, which is called the Sergeant of the Arms. And you saw yourself, about four of the top brass of the Royal Bahamas Police Force, starting with the Deputy Commissioner, dragging out members of Parliament. What level of example is that? Now back to the House. Why there needs to be a vote of no confidence? It should have happened a long time. I said this in the Senate and I say it again now. First example, we have right now on trial a former chairman of the Water and Sewage. We had given evidence in that same trial a former director of the Water and Sewage, who is also the Deputy Speaker, who, review it, confessed on the stand to doing the very similar thing that they have one chairman of the... and he confessed to that, and what the Prime Minister do is say resign, but yet he is still the Deputy Speaker of the Honorable House of Assembly. There should be a no vote of no confidence against him. He should have been removed. How you could be honorable confessing on the stand in court under oath to doing the same thing at the trial of someone who your government is placing for doing the same thing? That's hypocrisy. Secondly, people don't move far from their propensities. Our current speaker in the House of Assembly had demonstrated consistently her modus operandi and her decision-making and processes not using the latitude of the rule also contributed to that debacle and harm to members of the House. She could have done what she did before when she wanted to shut up the leader of the opposition, stand up and adjourn the House. But instead, it went into a melee that could have harmed any member of Parliament because of the gathering. So there should be a vote of no confidence. Final point is this. Why want a vote of no confidence? Because they'll take the opposition vote of no confidence and they will turn it into a vote of confidence. And then I want the public to see all of them in this current day and time say, yes, she good. Yes, she can stay. Because public opinion changes public policy. Let's see how much the PLP really respects public opinion. Charge them with a vote of no confidence.
We got to get out of here, folks. This is Rima. Merry Christmas, everyone, so far. Do some safe shopping. Tune in next week at 5. I'll meet you here. They're crucified Jesus Christ. I'll never forget, no way. It's old Marcus Garvey for Rice. I'll never forget, no way. They turned their backs on Paul Bogle. Hey, so don't you forget, no youth, who you are and where you stand in the struggle. They got so much things to say. I may not come to fight flesh and blood, but spiritual wickedness in high and low places. So while they fight you down, stand firm and give Jah thanks and praises. Cause I and I do expect to be justified by the laws of men. By the laws of men. Oh, you may find me guilty, but prove my innocence. Oh, when the rain falls, all now, people fall and one man's house stop. Remember that. When the rain falls, it won't fall on one man's house stop. They're singing so very much, so very much. So much to say. They got so much things to say right now. Yeah, they got so much things to say. I and I have come to fight flesh and blood. Spiritual
like you go places. So why live like you don't stand firm and give your thanks and praises? I and I don't expect to be justified by the laws of men. Hey, truth got to prove my innocence. I know the wicked think they found me guilty. They got
so
they lovering all the time. So much things to say, rumor about they got the rumor without humor. They don't know what they're doing, yeah.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian.